David Tannenbaum made his professional debut at the age of 16. At 31, he's a recognized master of the classical guitar. From a new recording of lute music David Tannenbaum adapted for the classical guitar. Tannenbaum's interest in music for his instrument spans the centuries. He's performed contemporary music by Peter Maxwell Davies, and next year he'll be performing a new guitar piece composed by Steve Reich. Tannenbaum now lives in San Francisco, where he's chairman of the guitar department at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. He grew up in New York, surrounded by music.
My father is a composer who teaches at Manhattan School of Music and has been at the forefront of electronic music. In fact, when the first synthesizer was invented, we went up to New Hampshire and rented it from Robert Moog to experiment with it. So I was always hearing the sort of music on the forefront. And my mom is a pianist, so I grew up in the environment of music.
But I suspected you did. There was a little remark in Newsweek magazine about you where you made a statement. You said you would be, you know, playing away, and your mother, was it your mother who would come by and correct the notes?
Well, actually, either one. And also, there were many musicians that were around a lot, you know, just friends. And I would be playing, and of course, the piano was in the middle of the living room, and I was always being corrected in terms of tempo or notes or this and that. And it was very natural. I don't think they could resist. It's like living with your own teacher, you know. And my mom was my teacher for my first 2 years, starting when I was about five.
Did it make you mad to have someone correcting you when you were a kid?
Yeah, I just got real frustrated. We used to fight all the time. And also, I was required to practice. Now I'm glad that I was, but then I wasn't. And the lessons were Sunday mornings, you know, and I just found the whole thing quite unfair, even though I loved music, you know, the requirements I didn't like. And actually, I got into more and more study. I studied the cello and I studied the theory at the local conservatory. This was in Westchester in New Rochelle. And finally, when I was about 10 or 11, I started to do these student recitals. And I was really rebelling against it and not practicing so much and not doing so well in these recitals. And I remember thinking to myself, this is the one thing I know I won't do as a profession, which is to play music in front of people. And, of course, it turned out that it was the one thing I would do. But I was given the option by the teacher at the conservatory, Michael Pollan. He convinced my parents to let me quit all the instruments for a year. He thought it would just be a good idea. And so I did immediately. And what did I take up but electric guitar?
Electric.
Yeah, and I started to play rock and roll, and I had a rock band. And I, you know, my parents were always back there, I think, pulling strings, trying to get me into classical again. And my dad took me kicking and screaming to an Andre Segovia concert, who's the real grandmaster of classical guitar.
Yeah.
And I was just dumbfounded. I couldn't believe it. And he played a piece that I had known on the keyboard. And he had arranged it for guitar, and I tried to do an arrangement, but, you know, I didn't know the ins and outs of doing that. So I was struggling with this little tiny 2-minute Bach prelude for so long that it was obvious that I should take some lessons. So I started to take lessons. The minute I did, I went crazy with it. I started to practice long hours. Through high school, I practiced 8 hours a day.
But you took the lessons because you wanted to.
Because I wanted to. And also, the classical guitar was a quiet instrument, and it had a repertoire that was outside the mainstream. And I could basically shut and lock the door and could never be bothered. And I think that's another reason that I took to it so much.
And could never be corrected.
Yeah, that's right.
Your guitar, the sound of it is so beautiful. I was really hit by the particular sound of that instrument.
Yes, I love this instrument, and it's built by a former New Yorker who lives in California. It's built by a man named John Gilbert, who is a great character and decided to live on the West Coast, and in fact, just rented a car with his wife and started to drive south from Seattle until he found the very place that he wanted to live, which ends up being Woodside, California. It's south of San Francisco. And he worked as a machinist for Hewlett-Packard until into his 50s. Never built a guitar. And a co-worker had a kit and was building one, and so John decided he would also do that. And he set up a shop in his garage and started to work at nights and weekends on building guitars. And he was getting himself exhausted, so he finally decided to just make a go for building guitars. And it's about 15 years later, and he's one of the most well-known makers in the world. It's something that's happened very quickly. Many of the most well-known makers are these sort of old families in Spain and in Europe that have been doing it for generations. And John Gilbert has become a household name amongst guitar makers. And his waiting list is something like 15 years long now.
15 years?
Yeah. There are hundreds of people on it, and he's now has his son as an apprentice to help him build some of these guitars.
Why is he good?
Well, he has a machinist's mind. He makes a full drawing of each of the guitars. And so, you know, the craftsmanship is really impeccable. But more than that, he seems to have this incredible talent for working with wood. There's a real art to that. And John will take me to his shop and I'll tap on different faces of guitars that are just hanging there. And the art is matching the qualities of sound inherent in the face wood with the wood in the sides and back. They have to complement each other well. And he endlessly thinks about these things. And he does some very interesting things. He thinks the guitars really take on their character by being played. He feels that he wants to build them almost as neutrally as possible, sort of like a piano, and let the player provide the characteristic. So the first thing he does is the minute he finishes one, he calls me up and asks me to come down and play them. And we go outside to this redwood forest because the acoustic is the most true outside. And I sit in the very same chair for each guitar. And I play, and he goes and takes a walk. He walks around the back of the guitar, and then he takes a walk down this path, and he sees what the projection of the guitar is. And he feels, you know, he'll be able to tell the qualities of the guitar. And if he doesn't have a guitar maker around, if I'm on tour, a guitar player, excuse me, and if I'm on tour, he actually hangs the guitar up in front of the radio and plays the radio into the sound box of the guitar and lets it vibrate with sound. And he feels that will break it in, but he says he'll only play classical music into the guitar.
Tell me about the nails on your hand.
Well, I have nails on the right hand only and not on the left.
Long, you mean?
Yes, long nail. Right. I have to keep them short on the left hand. But classical guitarists play with all the fingers except the pinky on the right hand. And this is, as you can imagine, a rather delicate way to make a living, to have fingernails. And until fairly recently, there was not a really good viable alternative to fingernails in case you broke one. I used to have concerts where I would break a nail and I would just be in big trouble and sometimes have to cancel. Then there was a kit developed called player's nails, especially for classical guitarists. And it was $25. It comes in this little package of nails of different sizes with some modified crazy glue. Somebody figured out after a while that these are actually cut up ping pong balls. That if you take ping pong balls and cut them up in the shape of nails, you can use them as fake nails.
And do guitarists do that?
The guitarists do that. And in fact, I had this incredibly difficult week to do early this year. I went from the West Coast to Vienna on a Monday, played a couple concerts, took a polar flight back on Saturday to the West Coast, played one concert on Sunday, and then went back to London the next day, on next Monday. So it was a very difficult week, and on the very first plane flight from the West to the East Coast, I broke my fingernail, and this, of course, was the one time that I did not have my player's nails with me. So what I had to do is, when I got to Vienna, I had to figure out how to say ping pong ball in German, and then I could fix my situation.
When you're performing, what is it you want to have happen to make yourself feel happy?
Well, what I want to have happen for myself is that, for me, time and everything else just disappears. That I get so lost in the experience that, frankly, I can hardly remember it afterward. And that's one of the great experiences that happens for me when I play. And I hope to communicate that. I hope that we all get lost in this experience. You know, one of the great things about music is that it's a nonverbal art. And so one of the things I work with when I perform is to try to make thoughts sort of go away. And of course, thoughts come up. They always do. But it's what we want to try to get is the shift of attention where we get away from the thoughts and back into the physical sensation of the music.
I hate to end this interview because I'm having such a good time talking with you.
Well, I am too, and that's really nice.
Thanks for coming in.
You're welcome. Thank you.
David Tenenbaum's new recording, Lute Masterworks, is on the Innova label. This is Fresh Air.